Hey, welcome in, everybody. We're live here at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today just kicking off. Tony, tell me the one piece of equipment that we need so badly that we're getting and we don't have yet. What would that be?
The camera.
The camera! If Fortunato is going to reenact every opening highlight play like he just did, will you promise to do that in the future?
What's it pay?
Walking to radio. There you go. That's
he
a radio.
He just reenacted both plays.
He did. He reenacted both plays and almost took out the control panel here in the Jaguar Radio Studios.
That's the other key piece of equipment in this room.
Right. Well, which
I was leaping for the 23.
Fortunato's the number one piece of equipment. And then we're waiting on the webcam and then all the other stuff that gets us on the air. That was a spectacular rendition. That was very timely, too, because yesterday we were talking about the most memorable plays in Jaguar history.
Yes, we were.
Those certainly qualified as two of the most memorable plays, I think, in Jaguar history. Tony, before we move on to the Jaguar football today, of which we have plenty to discuss, 7-1 beatdown, the World Cup, I thought it was over, but apparently it continues on for other countries once the United States is eliminated. Nonetheless, is Neymar that good?
Neymar's pretty good, but, you know, you don't give up 7 goals because your forward is out.
Probably not. Was it an emotional crisis? Were they having a letdown because their captain was suspended with a yellow card?
Well, Thiago Silva was suspended. They obviously look spent emotionally, but this is a guy who plays center back for Brazil as well. So, and a lot of what Germany was doing was straight through the middle of that Brazil defense. They were pathetic. I mean, pathetic. They were so much worse than Team USA was at any point in this tournament. We saw Germany play Team USA. They didn't beat us the way that they beat that Brazilian team. That was flat out embarrassing for Brazil. And watching those fans just cry and cry and cry because...
Fans? What about the players? What about the guy who apologized to the world after the game? You don't have to apologize. Apologize to your country if you want to. The world doesn't give a rip if Brazil wins the World Cup.
No, it's not about if we give a rip if they win the World Cup. It's that, look, this is the semifinal of the World Cup. You let down yourself, you let down your team, you let down your nation. But for all the fans out there who were looking forward to Brazil-Germany...
Was UNLV apologizing as they ran roughshod through the NCAA tournament? No, they were not.
Awful.
It was a bad look to be all weepy-eyed, apologizing to the world. Nobody cares.
They were surprisingly terrible yesterday. That was the worst performance by any team in this entire tournament.
Yes, it was.
What Brazil did yesterday, and it looked worse than it actually was.
Neymar's their best player. I don't know about this other guy who's their captain. Is he their second best player?
I don't know that he's their second best player, but he's their captain and he plays center back.
He's one of the best players.
He's basically the signal caller
for
the team.
He's an important player.
Yeah, I mean, he's a vitally important player, and for him to get a yellow card the way he did, I don't know if you saw it. He kicked the ball out of the goalie's hands and then shot it into the goal during their quarterfinal match. That's how he got suspended. That is completely stupid. I mean, there's no other way around it. It's completely stupid. He deserved the yellow card and deservedly missed this game. And because of it, his country looked completely lost in the semifinal in their home country against Germany. It was awful.
You know why you should have made the trip to Brazil for the World Cup? A lot of very distraught Brazilian women in need of consoling right now. All throughout the South American continent, there are Brazilian women. That is a large country. It is, some have described it as continent sized. I don't know how it matches up with Australia, but
it's huge.
That is a big country. But nonetheless, those Brazilian women are a little sad today, along with the rest of them. So on we go. It's over with, for the Brazilians, and, Germany will take on the winner of Argentina and the Netherlands. That's today. Is that match today, the semifinals?
Yes. The other one is today at 4.
When's the championship?
Sunday at 3.
Big advantage to the Germans to play yesterday? Doesn't matter. One day?
No, not with, you know, the whole week basically to get ready for it. It's not that big a deal.
All right. World Cup, mercifully winding down. I'm sure you'll have great reaction, next week to the championship match. In fact,
I'll be watching.
Take the whole week. No, I know you will. I'm only kidding. I know you will, and that's fine. 7-1.
I only watched the first half of yesterday. I'll
see, but here's the problem. Everyone wants offense. 5-0
was enough for me. I was done.
Everyone wants offense in soccer. See, and you are a soccer nut. You're only going to have two more soccer games in the World Cup, and you turned it off at halftime because it was boring.
I found something else to do.
It was boring.
It was an awful game.
It was 49-7 is what that game was yesterday.
Yep, and I had no fantasy prospects in it with the 49 side or the 7 side going, all right, now they got to open that thing up. So,
right, like, all right, I'm down 49-7 in the fourth quarter. Garbage time!
That's right.
Here we go.
None of that was going on, so it got flipped off.
I love garbage time. All right, you could pile up stats in garbage time. Peyton Manning's been called a stat boy quarterback by a lot of folks. He is the Vegas headliner, shortest odds to win the MVP, which would be his sixth MVP. I guess he's got four outright, and he shares at least, well, he shares one with McNair. I don't know if he split one with anybody else. I think, I know Favre split one with Barry Sanders, I believe, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. 50 people from the Associated Press vote on the MVP. That's it. 50 writers vote on the award. If you tie 20-20 and somebody else gets 10 votes, that's it. You get a split MVP and you both get full credit for winning the Most Valuable Player award. But regardless, Peyton Manning's 3-1 in Vegas today. We ask you, among other things, that you're welcome to weigh in on Jaguars today. The Tom Bush family of dealerships ask Jaguar fans daily what drives you today. They ask you simply, speaking of MVPs, who will be the Jaguars' most valuable player in 2014? I think we could probably narrow down the list of candidates, and we'll do that ourselves throughout the course of the program today. But weigh in on Facebook.com/Jaguars today. Again, even on Facebook, use the hashtag Jaguars today. Easier for us to sort things out. If you're tweeting and you want to have your tweet read on the program, use the hashtag Jaguars today. Fine, especially today. Today's an easy one. You can easily put your answer in 140 characters or less, including the hashtag. Just give us a name.
Player's name.
Or if you want to go all stats on it, like a lot of people have done, a lot of people in favor of the bone crusher, Toby Gerhart, winning MVP this year. Still didn't have 300 carries in the National Football League at this point. Josh Carney and I were talking yesterday some fantasy football stuff as you and I think everybody around here thinks Toby Gerhart's a nice kind of sneaky play just because he's going to get the ball so much this year. You wonder how much the Jaguar offense is going to put him in position to score touchdowns this season. But there are a lot of optimistic fans out there. But right now, I just see where he's going in fantasy drafts. Even now, I think it's going to go up as the season approaches and people start to realize there aren't too many running backs in his category that really don't have any direct competition for the amount of touches that he's going to get. But he's still, to me, being undervalued out there in fantasy drafts right now, Tony. But I think that'll change as time goes on. Also, I told you yesterday that Pro Football Talk in their power rankings had Oakland ranked 32nd. The Miami Dolphins were ranked 31st, and then Tennessee came in 30th, meaning the Jags had cracked the 20s at least. Well, they snuck into the 20s. They came in at 29, and I thought they did a pretty decent job giving a breakdown of what the Jags have, what they've added this offseason. Fortunately, I was closing the door. Is there an ice cream truck in the hallway? What's in the hall? Doesn't it sound like an ice cream truck's out there? I told you my thing with ice cream trucks. If one comes by, if an ice cream truck comes down the hall, I'm getting up in the middle of the program. I'm just telling you now. And I will go get a toasted almond bar from my father.
If an ice cream truck came down that hall, I would be getting up out of this studio as well.
That'd be awesome.
It would be for a different reason.
What if a push cart?
Why is there a truck in the middle of this building?
What if an ice cream push cart came by and, oh, man, if we still do the Friday Top 5, seriously, right now, Top 5 ice cream truck novelty items?
Uh-huh.
Come on. Seriously? I mean, do you, nobody really likes the rocket pop or the bomb pop, as some call it, but it's kind of a staple, right? It's Americana.
It certainly
is. You get
the
bomb pop. Maybe we'll do a bonus edition one day of the Friday Top 5. Maybe we'll just bring it back in a Jaguar-related incarnation somewhere down the line. Speaking of, the guy who used to do the Friday Top 5 was Brent Martineau. I believe we'll be sitting in with you at least one day, next week.
Yeah.
Half the crew, I'm going on vacation. Half the crew, more than half the crew, is going to Birmingham, Hoover, Alabama area for SEC Media Days. So we'll expand the repertoire of co-hosts in here. Of course, John Osher, one of them. He wrote his story on five risers to watch in training camp, kind of breakout candidates for the Jags. We'll talk about that a little bit. I know you'll have him on Friday.
Yeah, we'll dig into that on Friday.
Co-host, and I'm sure you'll get deep into that as well. So we'll get into the PFT power rankings. Also today, we continue a look at the AFC North. We started yesterday with the Cleveland Browns. Today, the Baltimore Ravens. Luke Jones from WNST up in Baltimore will join us to give us the offseason lowdown. What does Steve Smith have left in the tank from what he can see? And the Ravens, just, you know, a year removed from winning a Super Bowl, what are their expectations? Can they get back to that kind of level of dominance in this upcoming postseason? We'll talk to Luke Jones about that in about an hour and 10 minutes on the program. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the number, as always. Told you the Facebook page. You can always tweet us as well, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren as well, and share your thoughts, your questions, your opinions on the Jaguars and the NFL at large. If you want to get in today, a couple of the things we'll throw out there for you to get the pump primed, so to speak, is 29th. Does that sound right to you? Does that sound optimistic, pessimistic, about right? Is it fair where Pro Football Talk ranks the Jags? Keep it in mind, it's a power ranking.
God forbid it sounds optimistic.
God, I know. But to some people, it probably does.
Maybe.
You know, as they're writing it, you almost get the sense.
No, they're clearly one of the three worst teams. This is ridiculous.
Right. This is way too high for this football team right now. But your thoughts on the 29th spot. Are the Jags, in your eyes, going to be considerably better than that, somewhat better than that? How would you assess that ranking for them? Also, Jaguar MVP. You can tweet us. You can post on Facebook. And you can call in at 641-1010 and share your thoughts on that and why you think that player is a candidate to win MVP of the team this year. And you got a chance to win a Jaguars Today t-shirt if you do that. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, again, it's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all your plumbing needs, any size, in the home, residential, commercial, industrial plumbing, the same number, 695-1911. Visit MetroRooter.com. Our Wednesday sponsor here, 641-1010. That's our phone number. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. It's not that Fortunato. Sorry. Good thing Joe doesn't get to guess the themes on this program, Tony.
He should stick to charades, is that what you're saying?
I'm thinking, yeah. We all would have gotten his charade, but
yep.
I've yet to get the theme so far.
Is it really? Songs that Weird Al covers?
No.
Eat it. I was hoping for some Silk the Shocker music today.
I'm going to work on that.
Silk and I are good Twitter buddies.
Yeah.
I was just followed by Silk the Shocker, and that is the official Twitter of multi-platinum artist Silk the Shocker, of course.
I bet he knows Beat It.
You can inquire at bookings at silktheshocker.gmail or something. I don't know.
So you don't have the theme yet, really?
Beat It.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil getting whipped.
Thank you.
World Cup.
Done.
They got beat.
That's it.
It was the Brazil beatdown.
They got beat down. You should have gone with a crying theme for Brazil today, I think.
Hey, I can still work that in.
Yeah, well, anything Brazil related then,
mm-hmm.
I guess we'll have room for it today.
Can't believe you don't know anything about Silk the Shocker.
And a little bit of Silk the Shocker as well. If he sang a song about crying or rapped a song about crying?
Well, he's definitely a rapper. If my memory serves me correct, I think he's one of Master P's brothers. Is Silk the Shocker.
See, it's got a sports tie-in right there. Master P, he wanted to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
For a while, and then he became an agent. And he signed Ricky Williams to that absurd performance-based contract. You see all the time, fans saying, oh, players should be paid on performance. They should be paid by, you know, how many touchdowns, how many yards, this and that. Well, they tried that with Ricky Williams. How'd that work out for Ricky? Not so well. It was the first contract I believe Master P ever did, and it was roundly panned as one of the worst for a first-round pick in any sport to have, back when you had a lot of negotiating flexibility. Now you're pretty much slotted in, which Brings up Marquise Lee. Still hanging out there, Tony. One of four, I think.
I know.
Rookies yet to sign. I know John Osher addressed this in the Ozone. Said he thinks it's, you know, just some small technicalities because the overall compensation is not going to change much. It's, you know, what do you call, when a guy goes, if the guy gets cut, goes to another team, offset money.
Yeah.
Right?
Offset language or money,
offset,
whatever.
Right. I mean, Marquise Lee, barring some kind of, I don't even want to say this in the same sentence as his name, but some kind of Blackman-esque meltdown, is going to be a part of this football team for the next 4 to 5 years, no questions asked whatsoever. You know, barring some career ending injury prematurely, something like that. You know, this team, which is so in need of wide receiver talent, he's clearly a talented guy. Even if he struggles the first few years, Tony, Marquise Lee, the idea of worrying about offset money, and I'm not saying that they are, but it's one of the things they could be debating. And that's basically, if you cut a guy, is he entitled to the money he has coming left to him from you if he goes sign somewhere else, if there's any guaranteed money in the deal?
Sure.
And he goes and signs somewhere else, is it offset by that new contract?
And I know we're going to dig into PFT's power ranking, putting the Jags there at number 29 here in just a few minutes, but it is interesting when you look at what the Jaguars did this offseason and the excitement that surrounded the draft, especially after those first two nights of it, when they go get a quarterback in Blake Bortles, they come back in the second round and get Lee and Robinson. And early on in the offseason practices, when you had the chance to go watch these guys, they stood out, especially Robinson did, to me at least, with his ability to just go get the ball in tough spots, and his hands were amazing during the time that he was out there. But we haven't seen him for much, you know? I mean, they just haven't been able to be healthy and out there on the practice field for much of this. And now, Mike, we're talking about 2 weeks from tomorrow they report for camp.
Yeah!
I thought this would be done by now with Marquise Lee. I still am not concerned that it's going to go into training camp, anything like that, but seriously, what is the holdup?
I don't know. I mean, nothing's going to change in the next 2 weeks.
No.
I mean, nothing, put it this way, none of the conditions are going to change now. One side may change, and maybe that's what they're waiting for. Well, there's no rush to sign it. Now we sign it. Now we sign it in 2 weeks. There's literally no difference, as long as you get it done before training camp starts. So, you know, like these collective bargaining agreement deals, they always seem to get done under the gun, but it's a new NFL term. There's very few things to quibble over anymore in these contract negotiations. The fact that we're sitting here and, you know, the widespread all but four players in the draft have signed already.
Yeah.
Which shows you that's a pretty clear indication. I'm going on vacation. When I come back, I expect Marquise Lee to have signed his contract. If not, I'll worry about it then, because then we'll be on the doorstep of training camp. Let's get some phone calls in today. 641-1010, talking about a couple things. Tony, I'll give you our thoughts on these as we go along. One, PFT has the Jags ranked 29th. Honestly, off as an overall, where would you have them? You know, I mean, they earned the third pick in the draft last year.
Yep.
They're right there in that. Even though we can all look closely and it's acknowledged by them and others nationally that they're making steps to improve and tangible, you know, additions to this football team have them on the right path. Well, everybody feels that way in the offseason for the most part. Some teams do have a net loss. Sometimes you lose some big guys and you haven't been able to replace them. But, you know, I was telling you, you look at the Oakland Raiders. If the Jags had, they were ranked 32nd, worst in the league. If the Jags had gone out and signed Justin Tuck, right, who had a pretty good year last year, and Lamar Woodley to come in and play in the front seven, much like they did with Chris Clemons and Red Bryan, although not the exact same positions, people would be excited about those guys because they played a lot of high-quality football, winning football,
sure,
Pro Bowl-level football in the National Football League. You know, they go to Oakland, and everyone's like, ho-hum, the Raiders are going to suck. You know, so I think it's a little bit of your perspective. We're excited here about what Chris Clemons and Red Bryant and others can bring to this defense. But, you know, and while they're acknowledged by the national pundits, I don't think anybody's going crazy saying, hey, that has tipped the balance of power in the AFC South.
No, I mean, look, I think the Jaguar fans understand why they're at number 29 in any power ranking list. And if you read some of the comments on that article on PFT, the Jaguar fans on there are going, yeah, we're moving in the right direction. This is about where we should be. If you're going to ask me, basically, they picked a 3 this year in the draft, right? Do I think they're picking beyond 4 when everything is said and done next year, yeah, I think they wind up probably picking later than fourth in the draft next year. But I don't think it's going to be a lot later than fourth in the draft next year. So it's reasonable to me at this point to have them there around 28, 29. That's
and
about where they are.
Once again, what to me is one of the main reasons pro football is infinitely superior to college football, in my opinion, and that's not for everybody, I understand, is that this means nothing. Who cares? That's just an opinion
exactly.
That has no bearing on anything. And while, yes, there's a playoff in college football, it's based on opinion who's ranked where and who gets in. And don't
sure.
tell me being ranked first or in the top 10, yes, you can come like Auburn did a few years ago from outside the top 25 and win the national title. Few and far between who are able to do that.
I did very much enjoy one Raider fan was commenting and was very upset with the fact that they were 32 and Jacksonville was 29. And he was like, look, we beat them the last 2 years, which they have, and then we go and get their running back. How are we lower than them? And I was like, oh, so you were better than them the last 2 years, and because of that, you wanted to go get their running back that they no longer wanted, and that keeps
that's
you
one
better.
Way of looking at it.
I mean, seriously, Raider Nation.
Well, Raider Nation's probably saying that's the one guy that was any good, but of course, we all know Maury's struggled with injuries the last couple of years. So if you had said this right after he led the league in rushing a few years ago, I think it would have a little bit more weight to it. But regardless, 641-1010. We got folks that want to weigh in on that, plus who you think Jags MVP will be this year. Let's start with Travis, first up today on Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. What's up, Travis?
Not much. How are y'all doing?
Great, man.
Great. I just wanted to comment on the MVP. I really think it's going to be Mercedes Lewis. And the reason I say that is I think with the two receivers we got in the draft that can stretch the field, I think the middle is going to be open. And when we had, you know, outside help, Mercedes did have a great year when we did have that speed on the outside. I think he's a better player when the linebacker or safety is one-on-one with him, because we're going to have to double one of those guys on the outside because of their speed.
I think that's reasonable. I think Mercedes is one of about four guys on the offensive side that I think you put into the, you know, the reasonable MVP category discussion, Tony. Offensive linemen, forget it. I mean, the coaching staff may determine that Luke Jokel is the most valuable Jaguar this year. But outside of them,
sure,
nobody else is going to determine that any offensive lineman is the most valuable anything practically ever. So the four guys to me offensively that have a chance to be considered the most valuable Jaguar this year are Chad Henne, because he's going to start the year as a starting quarterback, and if he plays well, he'll have a chance to hold that job at least for the majority of the season. Toby Gerhardt, you know, they're going to give him the rock. He's got a chance to pile up statistics. Cecil Shorts, because I think he's, you know, the surefire bet. Doesn't mean it's a guarantee, but he's the easy bet to lead the team in most receiving categories this year. And Mercedes Lewis, because he's the unquestioned starter, every down player at tight end. And he has been a Pro Bowler in the past. And if he could get back to where he, you know, he ended the season, four consecutive games scoring a touchdown. If he scored 10 touchdowns this year and, you know, put up 800 yards, could sneak back into another Pro Bowl and definitely be considered among the Jaguars' best players or most impactful.
Those four are certainly the most reasonable.
You see, who else? Who else? Is there another candidate on offense that you would put in the conversation?
Well, depending on how the season goes, it could be Bortles. I mean, if he is thrown into the fire early and performs well, then he could certainly be an MVP for this team. You don't expect him to be in that position. But looking at guys that could be, I think Allen Robinson, with what he potentially gives them in the red zone as a big receiving threat, he's a guy that could catch 8 to 10 touchdown passes this year. I'm not saying that he will, but if he gets around those numbers, he's probably going to be leading the team in that category when everything is said and done. I think it's reasonable to get that out of him. And I don't, again, expect him to be on this level, but if what we've seen in the offseason translates for Denard Robinson, and he's a guy that can give them that big play from time to time, he'll at least be in the conversation of the guys that how much they impacted this team on the offensive side of the
ball. Yeah, I just don't think he touches it enough this
Me
year.
Either.
And look, you could create a scenario. If Toby Gerhardt were to get hurt early in the season and Denard Robinson had to carry a much more significant workload than anybody expected, and he plays up to that level that you're talking about, sure. I mean, there are guys that could do that. But I think the four that I mentioned offensively, I think, are the most by far the most likely candidates.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, over 90%. I'll take those four over the field all day long. We'll talk about the defense here in a minute. Let's get Daniel up next on Jaguars today. 641-1010, the number. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good, guys. Don't underestimate the contract here for Cecil. I think with him being the only guy who's had any experience that's going to be starting and being hurt all last year, I think he makes a lot of sense as MVP. I did want to say that with Ryan on, I think Monday, it was really fun to listen to some of the old stories from the old era. I became a Jaguars fan when Jack Del Rio took over, which I know is great timing. And right whenever, Gus and Dave get hired, but rightly so, all the coverage shifts to what's going to happen, the new stuff, the new era, and it's just like a cutoff. You hear nothing about the stories or how it happened or what happened with Malarkey, and I don't want to trash anybody, but with nothing really going on until training camp, any stories you can share about how bad things maybe got or crazy stuff that's happened when Malarkey was here right before it all came apart, and I'll listen off the air.
Yeah, all right, you got it, man. It's tough for us, particularly because Tony and I were on from 1 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yep.
At that time period, which when you look at the way the Jaguar schedule works throughout the week, really didn't allow us during the season to ever be down here except on game day. And you can't really get a feel, in my opinion, for the ins and outs, the daily ins and outs, the moods of a team,
no,
being around the team that infrequently. But having Brent Martineau in the locker room every single day as we were doing the show with Brent over the last however long it's been, and having him kind of reporting back to us what was going on. I mean, clearly, Mike Malarkey, I think, it was just cut from the old school cloth that you did things my way. There wasn't a lot of levity. There wasn't a lot of passion. I'm sure he was passionate in his own way. It wasn't like it is with Gus Bradley, clearly. Players, there were a significant amount of players that I think didn't enjoy playing for Mike Malarkey.
Well, and that was clearly exemplified in the story that came out late in that season where a couple of the veterans on the team had gone to Malarkey and said, look, you're working us too hard in practice.
Right.
At the end of the year, we can't do these padded practices.
And Mercedes Lewis, I believe, among them.
Yeah. This was the leadership of the team was going to Malarkey to represent the rest of the guys in that locker room to tell you how much it had fractured just inside the building. And it goes back to that last year with Jack Del Rio as well, where it was one year too many with Jack. And you could see it on the players' faces that it was just wearing on them because whatever ideas worked for Jack early, they didn't late. And you could see that the players just didn't believe in what was going on here in Jacksonville at that point in time. They go through, they fire him in the middle of the season. Mel Tucker is the interim coach for a while. They hire Mike Malarkey during that offseason. Everyone's like, Mike Malarkey is the best we can do? I mean, that's the best option that Jacksonville has available to him. The idea of maybe the team being sold at that point is up in the air as well. I mean, there was a lot going on that went against that Jaguar team that season. The Blackman stuff started really coming out that year as well. It was an abject disaster that year under Mike Malarkey. They wind up 2-14. I mean, it was absolutely terrible.
Any coach, if he doesn't have success over a period of time, is going to wear on you no matter what his tactics are. Whether it's Pete Carroll, who is, bouncing around, making everybody think that it's they're on vacation, whatever. He's got that feel-good atmosphere going up in Seattle. Give him three consecutive years of going 4-12. Give Bill Belichick that. And people will say, well, has Belichick's time passed him by? Can you no longer do it Belichick's way, where one voice speaks for the entire organization and everyone else is told to shut up and get in line or they're shipped out? And guarantee, as long as you win, you can do it that way. You can do it Coughlin's hardline way, old way. You can do it the more friendly way. You can do it anyway if you're getting results. And two or three years of non-results, well, most guys would be out of a job by that point in time. But if you got a guy like Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick who's built up some goodwill with the organization and they're able to withstand that, those stories would be coming out no matter who they are. But if you come in,
sure,
and you don't win practically anything as Mike Malarkey, and you do it in a way that rubs the players the wrong way, it was a bad fit from the very beginning. And honestly, in a sense, Tony, I think it it was almost a good thing that it was such a bad fit right away, because it was better to be done with it, get it over with, and have Mike and Gene Smith out the door at the same time. If you had brought in a coach, I mean, imagine that a dynamic, if you had brought in a coach who maybe wins 5 or 6 games or whatever the case, and maybe did it with smoke and mirrors and earns himself another year. It's tough to fire a coach who maybe goes 6-10
right.
in his first year. Well, then do you keep the GM as well for another year, or can you fire the GM and bring in a new GM with a coach that you just hired a year ago, and this guy wants his own guy in there? It was almost better that he was as bad as he was right away. Just rip the whole Band-Aid off and start fresh like they did.
And keep in mind, we were still dealing with the you know, the momentum going into the offseason of having won against the Colts the year before that cost them potentially Andrew Luck. I mean,
right.
there was a lot going on in this fan base and in this division that was going against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the boredom that was Mike Mularkey didn't help anything.
641-1010 if you'd like to get on board talking about who is the Jags' likely MVP in 2014. We'll give you some of the candidates we think are logical on the defensive side of the football. Also take a look at some of the reasoning behind the Jags' ranking of number 29 in the PFT power poll that is being doled out piece by piece. Yesterday, they put the Jags up there. They're doing, I believe, 2 teams a day, marching down towards the start of the regular season. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, it's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. That's more like it, Brazil. Who's crying now, Brazil? You are. Right? The whole world is not weeping with you, however.
Man, were they ever crying.
Despite your apologies. Oh, just whiny babies, whiny babies.
Have either of you ever cried at a game?
Oh, yeah.
When I was, like, I don't know, like 6, maybe? I don't know. No, I haven't cried.
Okay, past 21.
No, not past 21.
Okay.
No, it was
a game you played in, or a game just that, like, the Braves lost or something?
No, I cried after the 49ers comeback against the Giants in that wild card. Ugh. Still upsets me.
It's unbelievable.
It still
You're
upsets
way
me.
Way too attached. Let it go.
Well, that
no.
was a long time ago.
How old were you?
I was 17.
Oh, my goodness! Just the answer was no. I've never cried.
No,
because
I don't.
My team lost.
No, I have, though.
All right. Maybe I don't care enough. I don't know.
It's okay to be vulnerable, Mike.
Is it? Over that?
I cried in anger after the 2000 Super Bowl.
You cried in anger?
I did, with how bad the Giants
played.
They got
beaten down.
I know. That was my anger.
I can see you shaking your fist.
I had
in
tears
anger.
Of rage.
Oh, my goodness.
After that game.
Tears of rage.
No, I haven't cried about the Braves in since I was a kid.
Since the Yankees put the whipping on him a few
gosh,
times?
Gosh, let's look.
Shall we go over in detail what happened?
96, dead to me.
To open up your tear ducts.
Should have been back-to-back.
Well, it did. No, I don't believe I've ever cried over the outcome. I get angry over the outcome. Unnecessarily so. My mom thought I needed to go to Gamblers Anonymous. I didn't even gamble. I was in high school, and I get so upset when St. John's would lose to Georgetown, because my best friend was a Georgetown fan, and I was like, you're a front runner. His dad went to Georgetown. He was a legit Georgetown fan, and they were a great rivalry when St. John's was any good.
Sure.
And I get so, just so angry, because I just wanted to smash it right in my friend's face that we beat you. And my mom's like, are you gambling on these games? You have to, no one cares this much about the outcome of some silly thing. I'm just laying the groundwork for my career.
I'm about to shed a tear or two of joy when Vanderbilt won a national championship in baseball. I did actually.
I take that as a yes.
I did.
But firm yes.
A few years ago when Vandy got to number 13 in the nation after beating Auburn when College Game Day came to Nashville for Vanderbilt-Auburn on Saturday night, and Vandy beat that ranked Auburn team to get to 5-0, we got to number 13 in the country. I cried. I was so happy, I cried after that game. Yes.
Right.
Tears of joy, that's a little different.
Yeah. Not like Brazil.
Tears of joy, like
20 minutes in, it's over, 5-0. Man, they were terrible.
You know, the only thing sporting-wise that it brings me to the brink of tears is Ronan Tynan busting out God Bless America. He's just phenomenal. He's absolutely
pretty good.
Unbelievable.
Pretty good.
And some of that kind of stuff. I get, you kind of get choked up, you get the military flyover. That's, you know, or if you get, oh, you get the all-time greatest, you get, our friend Kevin Bacar. Remember when he came home in the military?
Yeah.
And got reunited with his family at the Jags game a few years ago. That kind of stuff.
Those get me every time.
Ah, and we talked about this at length last year, Lauren, but that whole montage of those that ESPN did, they do like a 12-minute piece.
Oh,
was
so
it like
good.
Last summer?
Yeah, it was.
They replayed that thing every 15 minutes, didn't they? I mean, that thing was, and I didn't care. I watched I would sit there and watch the entire thing.
Balling like a baby.
It's, you know, I mean, yes, probably so. I don't know, probably worse than a baby.
And but, Mike, speaking of patriotic fans, right?
Yes.
People can win something.
Oh, you're tying it all together so well. We know that no structure is strong without a strong foundation. And Foundation Professionals of Florida believes that you, the Jaguar fans, are the foundation of the Jaguar organization. And I think the Jaguar organization would probably agree with them on that. So, with that, this week's theme was Patriotic Jaguars. You can tweet us at any of our Twitter addresses, MD_1010XL, 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, or we have a thread going as well on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Post a picture, and either way, or I suppose you could email it to me, but I don't check it as frequently as I should, of something that evokes the idea of Patriotic Jaguars to you. We've gotten several samples. You can go and look, and we'll pick one. We'll have a different theme every week. I don't know what Tony's going to come up with next week, but we've got some ideas floating around. And each week's photo winner will go in a drawing, at least for the time being, go in a drawing for tickets to the home opener, Jags-Colts.
Yep.
Which is pretty sweet, even if you have tickets. Bring some more friends with you. Sell them. I don't care what you do with them. That's courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. If your home's foundation is letting you down, you don't have to let it. Foundation Professionals of Florida can step in. They know all the symptoms. Exterior and interior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors. There could be more than one solution to your foundation problem. Foundation Professionals offers underpinning, polyurethane, and cement grout injection, sinkhole stabilization, seawall repair. If it has to do with the foundation, the base of your home, your most important investment, your greatest investment, call Foundation Professionals of Florida, 287-2690. Or visit foundationprosfl.com. That's prosfl.com, foundationprosfl.com. So Patriotic Jaguars, the theme this week. Tony, defensively, for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
It's tougher to be seen as the MVP of a team, period, playing from the defensive side of the ball.
Sure.
If we didn't limit it to, say, defensive MVP, if we said overall MVP of the Jaguars, how many defensive players do you think have a realistic chance of topping that list?
Chris Clemons, because he could be a sack man.
At the need spot, and he's a higher profile guy having come from the Super Bowl champs.
I think because of how well known he is, especially with this Jacksonville team, Posluszny playing middle linebacker has a chance to win that kind of thing. And I think Cyprian is playing a position that can impact the game that way. But those are really the three guys.
I think those are the guys I would agree with you that you'd keep your eye on. I think Posluszny would be the favorite on that side of the football because he's already got, comes off the...
Well, he's going to have, 150 tackles. I mean, that's going to happen. And if he gets some big plays outside of that and the team is really good on the defensive side of the ball, he'll get a lot of credit for it.
And was an alternate to the Pro Bowl last year, a trip out to Honolulu. Once you do that, you get in that pipeline, you get in that consciousness a little bit more, and you seem to do better in terms of postseason honors. So I would say Paul Posluszny. And in terms of when you compare him to the offensive guys, I mean, I think Chris Clemons is a long shot because I agree. As a defensive lineman, he's the most likely guy, although I have a sneaking feeling Andre Branch may be the guy that challenges for the team lead in sacks this year.
Could be.
That's just my hunch. But the way they want to use the front four on defense here, much like they do in Seattle, is rotate those guys so heavily. They'd, I think, much rather have four or five 8-sack guys than two or three 10-12-sack guys. You know, although if you get three 12-sack guys, you're doing pretty well. You get the idea. They'd rather have waves of guys that can hit you and come at you and get after your quarterback. So I think it's going to be difficult, although Chris Clemons prior to last year had put up some double-digit sack seasons
yep.
in Seattle. So even in that system, you know, you get the benefit of playing with fresher legs, you know, get maybe more effective snaps on the football field. It's tough for a defensive tackle to stand out that much. I think some Derek Marks, you could argue, was the best player on the team last year. I think Posluszny was probably the MVP of the football team. But if you really follow the team, you realize how well some Derek Marks played. It's just tough for certain positions to garner that kind of attention. Well,
Marks was great last year for this team. And you could see the difference when he was on and when he wasn't on the field for them as far as the pass rush that they were able to get, as meager as it was for most of last season. I think there's a chance maybe one of the corners, if they had a huge year, could be considered for that. I mean, if Ball or Grotz got to a point where they're picking off, you know, 6 to 10 passes, that's huge impact for this team in that defense. They would be in the conversation at least, but it would take something that kind of special for them to be at that point.
Share your thoughts on Jags MVP with us via Twitter, Facebook as well, and at the end of the show, we'll take a look at some of the nominees that you put forth. As Peyton Manning was named the odds-on favorite to win the MVP. I don't think any surprise out in Vegas. He's 3-1 to win the MVP. Who else would you think? Did you look at the list of the top MVP candidates in the sports books?
Yet.
Who would you expect to see in there?
Tom Brady.
Obviously. He's at 9-1.
Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers and Breeze are at 9-2. So 4.5-1 right behind Manning. Andrew Luck is in fifth place. Now, and I could see that, but now the big conversation, we saw that whole ESPN ranking of the quarterbacks by tiers. Is how close is Andrew Luck to that tier of quarterbacks, that top four, the consensus top four that have been at the top now for several years?
I think he's close. I honestly think he's close, and this comes down to a conversation that I had with O'Halloran on Thursday when you weren't here. It's about your definition of what it means to be elite, and I think elite is about how you affect the team around you. And I think those five quarterbacks, it doesn't matter what team you put them on, those five guys that we just mentioned improve in the win column, whatever team they go to. It doesn't matter how the roster is put together. It doesn't mean that they make every team a playoff contender, but they improve any team in this league by 3 or 4 games just by being on the roster.
By the way, Adrian Peterson and Calvin Johnson, the most popular non-quarterbacks or the best odds among non-QBs.
We're shady.
I just looked at it. The article said those two, they're actually tied with LeSean McCoy at 25-1. Cutler and Stafford come in at 20-1. I'll tell you what. I'm watching drafts unfold right now.
A lot of talent on that offense.
If you are playing fantasy football this year, and you're not one of these crazy people that takes a quarterback in the first round, unless he's Peyton Manning, that may not be crazy. If he could duplicate the numbers from last year. Cutler is maybe the guy to wait on this year. He's going outside the top 12 in most drafts, and I think he finishes inside the top 10 this year in fantasy quarterback points.
Cutler is this year's Romo.
He's got
where you waited last year. It's like, let everybody else rush to get all these quarterbacks, and Romo was always the 10th, 11th quarterback coming off the board. Fine.
Phenomenal weapons.
Right.
And a pass-happy head coach. Just absolutely great. And he's got the long-term extension, so his mind is clear, all that stuff. He's in a good place to put up some monster numbers if he can stay healthy this year. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. This date in football history, everybody's favorite. Coming up next, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We're live.
I'm Lauren Brooks, your 1010 XL, 92.5 FM, Pekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update, brought to you by the Law Office of Keith D. Collier. The second-ranked team in the world marched nearly untouched into the World Cup final as Germany hammered Brazil. The host country was down two of their best players. The Brazilians now have to find a way to pick up the pieces for the third-place match Saturday, which we'll have for you on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM, beginning at 3:30. Argentina is now hoping history doesn't repeat itself today, since one of its best midfielders in Angel Di Maria is out for the semifinal match against the Netherlands, which kicks off at 4 o'clock. Former JU standout and current second baseman for the New York Mets, Daniel Murphy, is having an all-star year and has been rewarded for it by being selected to the 2014 Major League Baseball All-Star Team. Murphy is set to be a reserve second baseman for the NL team in the July 15th game, which will air for you here on Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Football season is fast approaching, and single-game tickets can be purchased now at Jaguars.com for the 2014 season. Don't miss fantasy football for real and the world's largest video boards, cabana pool parties, and on-field seating all at Everbank Field. I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010 XL on 92.5 FM, Pekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update, brought to you by the Law Office of T.C. Collier. More Jaguars Today with Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony is coming up next.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
God love you. You've hung in this long. We are ready to unveil what happened on this date in football history. It's presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Tony, can you identify George Preston Marshall, Vincent Bendix, Jay O'Brien, and M. Dorland Doyle? Any idea who they were?
Irish mobsters in the 40s.
Good guess. They may have been, actually. But in 1932, before they turned to a life of crime, they were the consortium of owners that was awarded the franchise for the city of Boston on July 9th, 1932. And this is according to the NFL's history fact book on NFL.com. Call it what you will. I probably didn't call it by its right name. It says, despite the presence of two rookies, halfback Cliff Battles and tackle Glenn Turk Edwards, the new team, named the Braves, lost money, and Marshall was left as the sole owner at the end of the year. Am I to read that back in the day, just the mere presence of any two rookies was enough to guarantee most franchises financial success, or were these guys particularly good, Tony? I'd have to go in the college Wayback Machine to check on Glenn Turk Edwards and Cliff Battles.
Right.
But that's what you had. Also, the NFL dropped in membership that year to 8 teams, the lowest it has ever been in history. And check this.
That was 32, you said?
1932. Official stats were kept for the first time in 1932.
Hey, that's what turned it around.
Let's keep an eye on what we're actually doing out there on the field. Happy birthday, Roy Miller.
Yeah.
Of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 27 years young today. Tony, and so hopefully I will wish a healthy 28th year, I guess he's in now. He's served 27 on this mortal coil. For Roy Miller, a healthy 28th year would be great. This date in 1985, Herschel Walker of the then New Jersey Generals was named MVP, speaking of MVPs, the United States Football League. And also that year, same day, Joe Namath signed a 5-year agreement with ABC to continue on as a Monday Night Football commentator.
Cool.
All copious things happen.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Generally, we get one kind of Scribini birthday. We had an outstanding birthday today. Who else? Oh, Trent Green was born on this day as well, 1970. Trent Green, I guess, what was the year? 99 is when Kurt Warner burst onto the scene, right? I want to say it was 99 because they went on to beat the Titans in the Super Bowl that year, right? After the Titans knocked the Jags off in the title game. And I'm sitting in the fantasy draft compound. This is the year where the defending champs, after Mario Bates has led Joe Coward and I to great success as fantasy champions. And we're sitting there, and I swear to you, it is, I don't know, the 10th round of the fantasy draft, and dude needs a quarterback. And I just, it's one of those things I just couldn't keep my mouth shut. I'm like, have you seen what the Rams are doing this preseason offensively? I mean, look at what they've got. Isaac Bruce is finally healthy. Look at what they've got. Marshall Faulks come over from Indy. This is going to be unbelievable. And the guy's like, all right, I'll take a chance. I'm literally that night in the preseason game, that night he gets hurt. And Kurt Warner, and so the guy basically throws his draft pick away. Nobody drafts Kurt Warner. And then Vinny Testaverde, who I had drafted coming off the greatest year of his career, I think he was 29 touchdowns, 4 picks in 98, blows out his Achilles in week one. So everybody who had Vinny Testaverde that year, what do? They picked up this unknown guy named Kurt Warner, who had thrown for 300 yards in what had to be a fluke in the first game of the season for the Rams.
Absolutely, yeah.
No question it was a fluke. And Kurt Warner would go on. I guess, did he win MVP that year?
He might have.
I think he did. There goes Osh walking by right there. Star of the Friday program coming up on Jaguars Day.
Yes.
I know Warner won, I want to say he won one and Faulk won one, or did Warner win two MVPs? I want to say he won one. I think he won one. I think Faulk won one during the Greatest Show on Turf days.
Let's look
back in the day. And I would imagine a Super Bowl MVP with his 400-yard passing performance as
1999, well. 1999, Kurt Warner was your NFL MVP.
Ding, 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 ding.
2000, Marshall Faulk was your NFL MVP.
Ding, 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 ding.
2001, Kurt Warner was your NFL MVP.
Okay, so he did win
two. Yep.
The Rams kind of cornered the market.
And then
in
2002, everything collapsed.
Oh.
In St. Louis.
Mike Martz was gone.
Do you remember who won the NFL MVP in 2002?
2002 NFL MVP.
They played in the Super Bowl.
I'm assuming it's an offensive guy. Mm-hmm. Rich Gannon?
Rich Gannon.
Yeah, Rich Gannon.
Won an NFL MVP in 02.
Oh, yeah. Because I think the Super Bowl was in 2003, so I think that threw me off from it. His numbers that year were staggering. Did he throw for nearly 5,000 yards, I want to say, that year.
It was his accuracy, if I remember, was off the charts.
Yeah. And he was like 36 years old at the time, I believe. And everybody then was looking for the next Rich Gannon. Can this guy become the next Rich Gannon?
2002, 67.6% completion percentage, 4,600 yards, 26 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Average 293 yards a game.
Those numbers now, you'd be like,
yeah, he's fourth in the league.
Pro Bowl alternate.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, honestly, right? 4,600 yards is good. It's very good. But 26 and 10? That's good. It's not like... I mean, it's the 10 interceptions, I guess, if you're throwing for 4,600 yards. But 26 touchdowns, when Peyton Manning just threw 55, of course,
right.
You know, he's the only guy in that kind of stratosphere. But still, those numbers don't really terrify you. This date in football history, by the way, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're on Gate Parkway. And you know, whether it's family dentist, cosmetic work, anything you need done, Invisalign, they've got it all. The stop snoring mouth guards, it's all there for you. 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com and get a complete list of comprehensive care services. I was looking at the, because I'm a degenerate gambler. I'm not really, but,
are you listening, Mom?
If I had a lot of money. Mom's passed away, but she's listening from on high, and she's like, I knew it! I knew it! I was right! St. John's, no wonder you never had any lunch money back in high school. Not only do they have the MVP props up, the MVP odds, we told you Peyton Manning, Rogers, Breeze, Brady, Luck, top of the list, Cutler, Stafford, no Jags that you can bet on for the MVP, but they do also have the 2014 Offensive Rookie of the Year odds to win the award. I told you before we came back a couple of Jags on the list and what their odds were. We'll get to them in a second.
Sure.
Give me the top six best odds to win Offensive Rookie of the Year this year. Top six, because I say that because there's a tie for fifth place.
Okay.
Top six. I think you'll nail this, honestly.
Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins, number one at 4.5 to 1, 9 to 2 odds.
Let me go Mike Evans.
Mike Evans is tied for second at 6 to 1 odds.
Offensive guys. Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel's tied with Mike Evans at 6 to 1. Can he walk it right down the line, ladies and gentlemen?
From there, I don't think any of, maybe, what were the odds on those guys?
We had 6 to 1 was Manziel and Mike Evans.
Okay, and none of the Jags you mentioned are in the top?
No, Blake Bortles comes in at 12 to 1, which to me is surprising it's that good. And I think what it tells you is the tendency for quarterbacks to do well in awards voting.
Sure.
But he's not even expected. It's known that he's not going to start the season as a starter. So the odds that he'd win Offensive Rookie of the Year get progressively longer.
Odell Beckham?
See, he homered up, ladies and gentlemen, as he went with the New York Football Giants.
Starting receiver Brandon Cooks, is he in there?
Cooks is in there. I'll give him to Watkins, Manziel, Evans, who are your top three. Teddy Bridgewater at 7 to 1. You know, he's not a guarantee to start the season.
Right, that's why I was
either
unsure if he'd even be on.
I'm with you.
But Blake Bortles is on there, I guess I could have assumed.
Right. If Blake's on there at 12 to 1, you figure Bridgewater is higher. Sankey, Bishop Sankey, who is the one running back who's expected to basically walk into a majority of the touches type situation for his football team out of the backfield in Tennessee. And then Brandon Cooks, as you mentioned, tied with Sankey at 9 to 1. Also, for the Jags, Marquise Lee is in there. Odell Beckham, by the way, it's Blake Bortles at 12 to 1, tied with Eric Ebron, the tight end for Detroit. Jordan Matthews at 12 to 1.
Anchor down.
By the way, have you gotten your commemorative Sports Illustrated Vandy baseball phone yet?
No, I have not.
Do they offer that package when you win the College World Series?
They might have something, but...
The Vanderbilt Commodores have just won the College World Series.
I'm going to have some championship gear.
And you, Tony, can get this official replica aluminum bat corded telephone.
Yeah!
Right here. So that's
I don't have a landline.
Still in the mail. Kelvin Benjamin comes in at 14-1. Then Odell Beckham at 16-1. Marquise Lee getting the nod at 18-1 for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Allen Robinson nowhere to be found on the betting list. That includes Cody Latimer, Davante Adams, Jason Morrow, Trey Mason, Jarvis Landry at 33-1. Really? I mean, he's not even going to start, and he's playing for I'm not saying that Tannehill's garbage, but it's not exactly the most high-profile, prolific passing offense
right
in the National Football League. And you got Mike Wallace and Hartline ahead of him in the pecking order at minimum. Jeremy Hill's a sneaky play at 33-1.
Yeah.
If Gio Bernard were to get banged up, he's not the biggest fellow in the world. And Charles Sims with the Bucks coming in at 50-1. There's only one prop bet for the defensive side. It just simply says, will Jadeveon Clowney win the 2014 Defensive Rookie of the Year? Yes or no?
Ooh.
And yes is plus 200. So it's basically they give you the option of all these guys on offense or Clowney versus the field on defense. Which way do you want to go?
Right.
So
I could see a guy like maybe Aaron Donald if he's going to get the start.
Absolutely.
In St. Louis.
But again, tough as a defensive tackle if you don't rack up enough sacks. He may... You know, but I think Khalil Mack, right?
Anthony Barr, maybe in the conversation. He'd have to have a big year.
If one of those guys, because a lot of those guys are going to play outside linebacker, have a chance to rush quarterbacks, if they put up 8 sacks, it's that kind of thing that's going to get you noticed,
right?
I mean, you could, there's certainly, cornerbacks, like a guy like Justin Gilbert, if they use him in the return game in Detroit. Calvin Pryor with the Jets at safety if their defense is really good. Clowney is going to be the guy that everybody has on their watch list this year. We'll see, man. I mean, the sports hernia, we'll see when he's clear to get back on the field. You know, I'm not sure when that's going to be, but not ready to go yet with training camp fast approaching. We'll talk Baltimore Ravens football coming up next. Luke Jones.
C.J. Mosley, can he throw his name in there?
Absolutely. I mean, and what happened to Arthur Brown, by the way? out of Kansas State, who was supposed to be the next big thing at inside linebacker. They drafted him in the second round last year. They replaced him, basically, it appears, with C.J. Mosley. It's become Jacksonville North to a small degree with Daryl Smith signing there last year. Then they trade for Eugene Monroe halfway through the season. And if you're wondering where Will Rackley went to, he went to the Baltimore Ravens and currently listed as their third-string left guard. Good luck with that, getting out of training camp. But Luke Jones will join us next from WNST in Baltimore to break down the Ravens' chances in 2014 as we preview the AFC North this week. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today rolls on here live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. If you are in the Baltimore area, you can catch Luke Jones weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 1570 WNST. He is the beat reporter for both the Ravens and the Orioles, by the way, and a frequent tweeter at Baltimore Luke if you're into the Baltimore sports scene. I will be this weekend as the Yankees put the pounding on the Orioles.
I'm starting to talk some trash.
Why not? You may have noticed, Luke, we've got 27 championships.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you didn't know, I'll be happy to remind you.
I sit here with it every day.
I'm guessing he reminds you. Are you excited about the Brandon McCarthy trade? I mean, is he the savior, so to speak?
missing piece. We call him the missing piece. The missing link is what he is, man. What happened to Tanaka is all I want to know right now. All right, we'll leave that in the rear view. How you doing? Everything good up there in Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Baltimore sports fan. I mean, the Orioles are in first place right now. This is the deepest into the season they've been in first place since 1997, the last time they won the AL East. But really, I think most excitement, this has become a football town over the last 2 decades. Really, from the first couple years the Ravens came into existence here in Baltimore, moving from Cleveland, it's been a football town first. And you know, 2 weeks out from training camp, and the Ravens, despite coming off an 8-8 season, made some
free agent additions. I think for the most part, people pleased with what they did with the draft, even if not exactly what they predicted. But I think there's lots of optimism. You look at the rest of the division that that the Ravens can be back in the playoffs after missing the playoffs for the first time under John Harbaugh last season.
And the conversation with Baltimore, I think, for a lot of fans starts with what's going on in the offensive backfield, especially Ray Rice with the off-field incidents that he's had. They draft a rookie who has the problems the week of the draft, basically Bernard Pierce. They weren't effective running the ball last year. What has the reaction of the team been to Ray Rice being back in the fold with them? What kind of suspension are they expecting for Ray Rice, and do they have enough in that offensive backfield to carry them like it did 2 years ago?
Well, so much of it, and you're right. I mean, the big question for this team, if you look at what they did last year, I mean, they were just god-awful running the football. I mean, they were 30th in the league in rushing offense, yards per carry dead last. I mean, it just it was not an effective season whatsoever. So, you know, as much as we talk about Ray Rice, and I'll address that in a second, the biggest issue for me looking at this Baltimore Ravens football team is how much more effective can their offensive line be? They revamped. They brought in Jeremy Zuda to be their new starting center. They acquired him from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They'll have Kelechi Asemele back at left guard after undergoing back surgery midway through last season. They re-signed Eugene Monroe. They have the Pro Bowler Marshall Yanda at right guard, but under Gary Kubiak and the zone stretch blocking scheme, their offensive line has to be worlds better, or it doesn't matter who's going to be back there. We talked as much, you just mentioned Bernard Pierce and Ray Rice, and both of those guys had their issues clearly last year. But I don't think Jim Brown could have run for 1,000 yards behind that Ravens offensive line last year. They just were not effective whatsoever. But question marks, even if their offensive line is in order, who's going to handle the workload at least early in the season? That's really up in the air right now. With Ray Rice, you've heard all kinds of different reports. I've heard different sentiments from inside the organization. I mean, they clearly expect suspension. Ray Rice met with Roger Goodell a few weeks ago in New York City. Still waiting on a decision, and I think the Ravens, more than anything, they want some finality to know whether it's going to be 2 games, whether it's going to be 3 games, whether it's going to be a little more severe, as some media reports have indicated. I have not been able to get a real strong read as far as what exactly the Ravens expect. I think they're kind of waiting with everyone else. One, you don't want to excuse the behavior whatsoever, but as far as precedent, he is a first-time offender, but I think it's also a very delicate situation. We know how the NFL likes to market to their female fan base. I think you need to send a message here, and it needs to be, it needs to be, because it was an unacceptable act that was committed, regardless of how the legal situation played out. So, what exactly that means, I've said all along, my hunch, my gut tells me it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 games. But I would not be stunned if it's a little bit longer than that. Who takes the carries at that point? I think Bernard Pierce, assuming he's fully recovered from off-season shoulder surgery, which he's expected to be full go for the start of camp in a couple weeks, he's probably the first one up. But Justin Forsett, someone who has some experience with Gary Kubiak, I think he'll get a look. He could be a factor early on in Rice's absence. And as you mentioned, Lorenzo Talaferro, they really like from Coastal Carolina. Got in trouble right after the draft. It was not a severe incident, more a case of he and some buddies had too much to drink and decided to punch out a window of a taxi cab. But, not something that the Ravens wanted to hear, but still someone from a talent standpoint that they really like. So, right now, I think you kind of look at it as a running back by committee situation. Ray Rice is in better shape. I think they have optimism that he'll bounce back from last year, but their running back position very much remains on skates, at the very least until they figure out just what they're dealing with as far as how long Ray Rice is going to be out.
Luke, you mentioned Justin Forsett. Obviously, we like to keep our eye on what the former Jags do around the league. Darryl Smith had a very good year for the Ravens last year. They signed Eugene Monroe to a contract extension. How well did he play? What is the talk about how they view him? Because clearly the Jags had the chance to decide if they wanted to negotiate a long-term deal with him. They opted to get a couple of mid-round or later picks for Eugene Monroe and washed their hands of him last year. So how has he performed in your eyes and the team's eyes up to this point in a Ravens uniform?
Yeah, Mike, we've talked about him in the past, and I've realized that he never realized the potential as far as becoming a perennial Pro Bowl left tackle or anything like that. But he played exceptionally well. And the other thing about Eugene Monroe, I mean, think about it. Last offseason at this time, what were we talking about with the Baltimore Ravens? All the leadership they lost, Now, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Anquan Boldin, Matt Burke retiring. I mean, you go down the list. Eugene Monroe had really emerged very quickly as a leader on the offensive side of the ball. Now, he's a pretty soft-spoken guy. He's not someone who's going to go out of his way to maybe be that vocal leader. But, you know, even while he was a free agent, he was working out at the Ravens facility. I think there was an expectation that he wanted to stay here. I think there was a thought that he thought highly enough, that the Ravens thought highly enough of him to acquire him mid-season, give up a couple picks, even though they knew he was going to be a free agent. But he played very, very well. And I think when you talk about him, I mean, he's not, you know, that 350-pound kind of tackle. I mean, he's more based on athleticism. You know, he's big enough, certainly. But, you know, certainly more of that athletic guy you're going to count on with good footwork. I think that fits perfectly with what the Ravens want to do with their zone blocking scheme. So he was very well received. And as challenging as that is to come in mid-season and pick up an offense and pick up a new blocking scheme, all those different things, he was basically the lone highlight of their offensive line when he came over from Jacksonville in what otherwise was a pretty disastrous group.
2 years ago, Anquan Boldin was able to carry this team during the playoffs, had an unreal run, really, during the playoffs and on the way to that Super Bowl for the Baltimore Ravens. They obviously traded him last year during the offseason. They bring in Steve Smith as kind of that veteran presence, something they were really missing in the wide receiver group last year. Do you expect that he can not necessarily fill the role that Anquan Boldin did totally, because they're not exactly the same type of player, but was that what they were looking for in Steve, is just that veteran presence to bring along some of these young guys?
They're looking for that, and they're looking for someone who can help move the chains. And you just said it. I mean, he's not going to come in and be exactly like Anquan Boldin. They're looking for him to bring the similar leadership qualities. Now, Steve Smith's a little more vocal than Boldin. You know, Boldin was the type who would kind of pick his spots when he'd get vocal, which tended to be at halftime when the offense was abysmal in the first half. But Steve Smith's a guy who we've already saw during OTAs and minicamp. He brings a little bit of a swagger and an attitude that this offense severely lacked last year. But all those intangibles aside, and I think Steve Smith's going to be exactly what they ask for in that regard, I think there are going to be some questions as far as how productive he can be at age 35. As you just alluded to, Boldin has never been the type that really gets great separation. He's just very good catching the ball in traffic. Is someone who's going to run really good routes out of the slot. Steve Smith in his career has relied a lot more on speed, and I think they'll use him in the slot a bit, but he's still a guy who's going to play a little more on the outside. So I think the reality is with Steve Smith, I think he's going to be productive for them. However, if they're looking for him to be that 1,300-yard receiver of old, the guy he was 4, 5, 6 years ago, I think they're probably going to get their feelings hurt. But they have Torrey Smith. They have Dennis Pitta. They signed Owen Daniels. They have Marlon Brown, a rookie wide receiver from last year who really came out of nowhere as a rookie free agent out of Georgia to have a nice rookie year. So they have other weapons. They don't need Steve Smith to be a 100-catch guy, but I'm still going to be skeptical to think how much he has left in the tank. You just look at the last 15, 20 years, NFL receivers 35 and older, it's a very short list of guys who will really be able to be productive at that age. So I think they know Steve Smith's not going to be a home run hitter for them, but if he can be that guy who can help consistently move the chains, it's just going to make Joe Flacco in that passing game that much better.
Luke Jones, WNST in Baltimore, here with us on Jaguars Today. Luke, they draft C.J. Mosley, the Ravens do, in the first round. Is this an indication that they swung and missed on Arthur Brown last year, or what?
It's hard to say. I mean, that was my first gut reaction, my first blush reaction to this. I mean, Arthur Brown was someone they were very excited to get later in the second round of last year's draft. But he is someone a little bit lighter. Not that C.J. Mosley is an outstanding specimen in terms of size, but certainly his athleticism. I think they feel he's going to probably start from day one against Darryl Smith. But, you know, talking to some people in the organization, Darryl Smith, they did re-sign to a 4-year deal, but if you look at the way that deal was structured, probably not a deal, and at Darryl Smith's age, not going to be a deal that he sees the end of. So, you know, it could be a situation where, you know, Darryl Smith is a starter this year along with Mosley, and then Arthur Brown could step in as early as next year, or maybe even as early as the end of this year, depending on how things go. So that was kind of my reaction. Certainly Mosley, his resume speaks for itself, what he did at the University of Alabama, but when you're drafting an inside linebacker in the first two rounds, 2 years in a row, after you've already re-signed a veteran who played very well for you last year, That did raise some eyebrows, and that was my first flush reaction. But the Ravens have indicated that Arthur Brown's still very much in their plans moving forward.
Circumstances don't often fall your way in the National Football League, but they did this offseason with Elvis Dumervil for the Baltimore Ravens. And the way that he got out of Denver, a lot of people are still kind of going, what happened there that he actually was able to sign with the Baltimore Ravens? How do they feel about their pass rush this year?
Well, I mean, it's funny because Elvis Dumervil, first of all, he's in the Ravens 3-4 system where they have Terrell Suggs playing the rush linebacker spot. He's not really a great fit for the Sam linebacker spot where you're playing that strong side, got to set the edge, you have to be a little bit bigger, kind of the Jarrett Johnson kind of guy that the Ravens had in the past. So he basically was a split-time kind of guy with Courtney Upshaw, who the Ravens drafted a couple years back out of Alabama. So, Dumervil struggles against the run, so he's more of a situational guy. But I think overall they feel good about their pass rush. They had enough confidence that Terrell Suggs' swoon in the second half last year was a little bit more about just needing maybe a little more of an injury. Maybe just wore down, maybe needed to condition himself a little bit better, but they're very pleased with the kind of shape he was in when he showed up for mandatory minicamp. And Dumervil, he did pick up a little weight, which I'll be honest, I'm a little skeptical about how that's going to play out, and I could still see him drop that weight between now and the start of the season because he's such a guy who relies on that speed coming off the edge. But they have those two. They have some other rotational guys like Pernell McPhee. They drafted Brent Urban out of Virginia, who they think can offer something as a pass rusher, as a situational guy. So I think their pass rush looks like it's going to be in pretty good shape. I mean, their pass rush was very, very good in the first half of last season, but Terrell Suggs, the way he wore down, had put a lot more pressure on Dumervil as well, and they just weren't able to do that as well in the second half. But I think overall, if you're looking at one of the biggest strengths on what I think is a pretty good, if not a great defense, when it's all said and done, I think certainly their pass rush, I think you have to view that as one of their strengths.
All right, last 2 years, Super Bowl champs and then missed the playoffs. Which is more likely this year, contend to be a Super Bowl champion or be on the outside looking in again?
It's hard to say, Mike. I mean, I feel there's so much variance on what this team could do this year because even last year, I mean, they still went 8-8 despite all of their issues. So I'll say because I'm not a big fan of the rest of the division, I mean, I don't think the Cincinnati Bengals did a whole lot to dramatically improve themselves, and you can make some cases that they took a step backwards. I think you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and still plenty of questions there. So I think that alone, and certainly Cleveland, you don't view it as being a major factor. I think that alone, I'd probably say more likely to be maybe not the favorite by any stretch, but certainly back in the mix of where they were, say, 2009, 10, 11, and certainly 2012 when they were 10-6 and then went nuts on their postseason run. So I'll say more likely to be in the mix there because of some of the moves they made, but I'm a little less confident in really trying to project the Ravens this year. I've said for quite a while now, I could see them being anywhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 11 wins, depending on, obviously health is the one caveat that you always talk about, but I need to see that this offensive line, the changes that they've made actually work. I mean, it's one thing to say you made changes and say, oh, we're going to be better. It needs to come to fruition, or Steve Smith and some of the other moves they made aren't going to matter nearly as much.
By the way, one of our favorite tweeters who listens to the program, at Duval Doom, took exception to you characterizing the team as moving from Cleveland. He said, no, sir, being stolen from Cleveland. I got to ask, I assume that's still a running theme with some people. Do the St. Louis Browns fans still feel like the Orioles were stolen from them as well? Is that one finally gotten over with in the Midwest?
Considering the Orioles are celebrating their 60th anniversary this year, that one you don't hear too much. But I'll say this much. Cleveland have every right to feel the way they do. Just like I've always said, even though I was an infant when the Colts moved out of Baltimore in March of 1984, I've always said, to me, that's something you never get over, and I don't think anyone has a right to tell you to get over it. It's your team. And just like Baltimore fans of yesteryear still feel the pain of the Colts leaving town, I understand Cleveland fans having their animosity toward the Ravens. With their feelings there.
Yeah, you're just trying to remind us how young you are. That's all you're doing.
Did it work?
It just made me feel older is all it did. Thanks a bunch. Luke, always good to talk to you, man. Continued success up there with all your endeavors, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime. Glad to come on with you.
You got it. Luke Jones, he is the Ravens and Orioles beat reporter for WNST in Baltimore. You can hear him weekday mornings from 6 to 10 up there. And anytime we're talking Orioles, Duval Doom also wanted me to ask him about the 4th and 43 situation from last year. I tell you what, Doom, I will just forward that tweet on to Baltimore Luke, and you guys can have your own conversation about that one. But we are we not the most Twitter-friendly show? You
we
can
are.
Tweet us something right in the middle of an interview, and we will work it in. We've asked Dave Caldwell all manner of nonsensical questions that have been tweeted to us.
Birthday shout-outs. We've done it all.
All kinds of stuff. He's done them, too. It's been fantastic. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we return, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you who is the most likely MVP for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. If you had to guess who wins team most valuable player honors this year, we'll take a look at some of your responses coming up to that. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter in the home, in your business, same day service that includes the weekends, the right people with the right equipment. Serving Jacksonville since 1978. Visit them at MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today rolling on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, what have we learned so far today, Tony? I would say at top of the list, Silk the Shocker, big fan of Jaguars Today, or at least whoever runs his official Twitter account.
Right.
How did they make, what a random thing. Out of all the, I'm sure there are more random people that I would not expect to follow either one of us on Twitter, but that just came out of the blue. Silk the Shocker.
How about that?
How about a guy with two first names or two nicknames? Silk. I'm guessing Silk's not on his birth certificate.
Probably not.
You could have just gone with Silk.
With the two Ks.
You certainly could have gone with the Shocker, and I doubt that's his given name. So, guy, when you're that talented, you can have two nicknames. You're talented enough to have one.
Yep.
I don't really have any, so that speaks to my obvious lack of talent. So there
you
have
it. Find some guys that deserve nicknames after this season as MVPs, Mike. That is the real.
Oh, he spins it back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Fat Tony, that is why he has a nickname. By the way, Blood, Sweat, and Tears go down gambling, I'm told, by Lauren, who says that plays both for Brazil because they went down brutally to Germany yesterday.
And the tears part.
And the tears. Oh yeah, that's a good point.
You're accused terrible habit. Is it like a show theme today?
What now?
You gambler.
Oh,
it worked for both.
I'm the gambler, and yeah. We've been talking about the Vegas odds. So yeah, all these things, and you cry at sporting events. We
I
found
do.
Out. So joy, rage, sorrow, the range, the full gamut of human emotion. Totally
and Mike
expresses.
Cries when he loses at gambling.
Probably so. I get furiously angry that I lose at anything. I'm not a very good loser. My son was about to put the finishing blows on me on the Risk for the first time. He's about to beat me. And I mean, like, I don't play around. I don't just say, I'll not defend this area. I'm going to try to whip him because I got to, because when he faces that Risk, that big Risk tournament when he's 18, how else are you going to prepare him for that, Tony?
Right.
Unless you beat him into submission at an early age.
That's right.
So he had me.
It's an important lesson. He needs to learn it when he's young, because apparently you didn't, on how to lose with grace.
Oh, I don't lose with grace. But the best way to do that is to not lose.
Right.
So I was in that situation. Would I have cried? I probably would have been crying tears of pride if my son had beat me at the strategy game. But he's still susceptible to my psychological warfare. I could say, oh, look at that one country over there with only one army defending it. Oh, I hope you don't take that one. And he'll go, oh, thank you. And he'll go do my bidding on a different part of the board. So
he's also learning manipulation.
I don't know if he's realized he's learning it yet, but hopefully it is subliminally sinking in.
He is now that he's going, once he listens to the podcast, of course.
The answer is no, I'm not a fun guy to play board games with. All right. So, whatever. All right. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day inquiry on Twitter and Facebook is the official title. We asked you today, who is the Jags MVP in 2014? What's your best guess? What did we get on the Twitter?
That's a big title. From Tommy, we got Toby Gerhart, hashtag Jaguars today. Simple, sweet. From Mike, we got Toby Gerhart as he unleashes everything he has been storing up sitting behind AP.
Oh, my.
Hashtag Jaguars today. From Janet Grotz, hashtag Jaguars today. From Josh, hands down, at Toby Gerhart will be MVP with 1,450 yards and 8 touchdowns. Hashtag Jaguars today. By the way, 8 touchdowns would be one more than the Jags scored rushing last year.
For the entirety of the team.
Yes. From Brock,
very
we got...
specific, though.
Sorry if I sound like a homer, but Denard is going to light it up.
Woo!
Hashtag Jaguars today. A Michigan dude there.
Warren excused him, said all fans are homers by definition.
From
because
Chad.
We all are.
We are. No doubt about it. I think Paul Posluszny will be the MVP. He's too good and consistent. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Robbie, a reach, but Chad Henne, as long as Lee Robinson and Shorts have great years. Hashtag Jaguars today. They're kind of dependent on each other for that. From Stevie, Cyprian, I fully expect him to be in the Pro Bowl discussion at the very least. Hashtag Jaguars today. Thanks, Irish Jag there. From Joey, Andre Branch breaks out in year 3 with 15 sacks and is our MVP. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag rhymes for shirts. From Joey there, in case you didn't
know. I love it.
Lauren, you need to keep track, because I like the pandering, actually. I do like the pandering. So you need to know, we need to run these by you to see if these guys have won shirts before. Cause
I'm like, keeping track.
In that same vein, Clint Alton went on Facebook with Jonathan Cyprian will be the Jags MVP. He's poised for an outstanding year with the upgrades to the D-line. He should get some picks with the D-line pressuring the quarterback. Hashtag best sports show, period. Hashtag Ooh. Like free shirts. Hashtag Jaguars today. Got all the obligatory. And,
got them in there.
And got them all in there, which is fantastic. Anything else?
I got a few from Cam. I'll take Brian Anger and Coffin Corner Skills.
Yeah, he's
hashtag
a weapon.
Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag
weapon.
He's a weapon. And finally, from Christoph, our English fan over there, MVP, Mercedes Lewis on offense and Jay Cyprian on defense. You know how I know he's not in America? Because he spelled offense and defense with a C.
Oh dear.
Instead of an S, which is common overseas.
Common mistake made overseas.
That's how
overseas.
I know you're a Brit.
I'm the ugly American. I am. You can't spell.
I actually looked it up just to make sure there wasn't a difference in definition between the two. There's no difference.
No,
it's
I
just
know.
That here we use an S and there they use a C. I don't know why. Just the way it works.
It's just stylistic and
it looks weird.
And because we're against taxation without representation.
That's
and
right.
Spelling words incorrectly. That's what Americans stand for. So
boom!
Don't you forget it, UK Jag fans. All right. Just because we let you root for our team over here doesn't mean you own them, all right? All right, there you have it.
Still celebrating Independence Day weekend over here, boys.
If you had to pick one, who's the MVP of the Jags this year?
Gerhardt's
got to be the betting favorite, doesn't he?
Gerhardt or Shorts, to me, are the two lead candidates.
My biggest question for Cecil doing that is, will he stay healthy? He looked phenomenal last offseason. Can he avoid the nagging injuries? Can he avoid the concussions? Play 16 games.
Right.
Play 16 games, I think you got a pretty good chance to be right there in that conversation.
Well, I'm sticking with Gerhart, and we had this conversation about who do you think is the most likely to make a Pro Bowl from this team, and I'll stick with Gerhart for the same reason I thought that maybe he could be in the Pro Bowl. Look, the fantasy numbers that a running back puts up, if he's going to get between 220 and 270 carries, it's going to be clear his impact on this team. For a guy like Cecil Shorts, like you said, he's been injured to this point in his career. Mercedes Lewis is dependent on other things. Toby's going to get the rock. And if he's going to get the rock that many times and he winds up as a 1,200-yard guy with 6 or 7 touchdowns, that's probably going to be the best piece on this offense this year.
That's just the way it is. If you go around and you name the MVP for 32 teams this year at the end of the season, or you did it, if we look back at last year, I would say that 25 of them are probably offensive guys.
Probably.
It's just, because it's you're still going to, not following a team day in, day out, you're going to tend to gravitate towards the statistical categories that stand out.
Sure.
And
with very few exceptions with guys like J.J. Watt and that kind of thing, where you can make arguments that they are so far and above.
But they put up numbers.
Right.
He's at a position. Haloti Ngata may be the best Baltimore Raven. How the hell can I know that other than,
right.
you know, the anecdotal evidence?
Every now and then he'll have a season where he's got 10 sacks and you're like, look at Ngata.
Right. If you're a defensive tackle getting 10, that's a pretty big deal. By the way, we'll speak to Brad Johansson, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals. He was the longtime voice of the Bengals, as a matter of fact. Man, the best defensive tackle in football, and Geno Atkins.
Coming back.
Got hurt, tore the ACL last year. What was it, like week two, I want to say, something like that. So we'll see how he's able to bounce back. This tweet to end the day from at JDub7706, Jason Whitmarsh. Mike the Smartass Dempsey would be a great nickname. Just saying, hashtag, would like a shirt. So, you know what? I resemble that remark. There's no question about that.
No doubt.
No doubt, he says. He said that a little too willingly. So that does it for us today. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Again, we appreciate our sponsors so much. If you enjoy the free programming, it's terrestrial radio, baby. We don't charge you a dime. And we bring you what we hope is the best daily Jaguar coverage anywhere on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. When I say that, I mean the entire station does support. The people that support the programs, that includes Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor for all size plumbing jobs. MetroRooter.com, 695-1911. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios, we bid you adieu. By the way, I'll be back, Tony. I thought my vacation started at noon tomorrow.
Oh!
Incorrect. Starts at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. I get the honor of hosting Jaguars Thursday for the first time ever with Jeff Loggeman in this very studio. I think Tony Vaselli might be checking in from the road on that. It's not going to be checking in
just
from the road.
Just you and Jeff.
And we'll see what we can get out of Fortunato on the program tomorrow.
Any more miming?
You and me back tomorrow. We'll take a look at the Bengals as we continue looking at the AFC North this week. You and John Osier on the Jaguar senior writer from Jaguars.com on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have the Steelers in the crosshairs, among other things, including John's recent story about five risers to watch in training camp. Guys on the upswing, including several of the ones we talked about today.
Yep.
So that'll do it for us. Ready to put the radio beat down on you like Germany doing it to Brazil. XL Primetime is next.
Embarrassing.
Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, and T-Wig. No Joe with Hacker and T-Wig coming up next. So for Joe Fortunato, we've got our Joe here. He's always here. For Lauren Brooks.
Joe can only take 2 days this week.
For Fat Tony, he's only got one nickname, but he's working towards a second. And for Mike the Smartass Dempsey, that would be me. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.